Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. We've explored the concept of secret space programs in depth, especially of late. It's been an ongoing bad romance, you could say, between NASA, DARPA, and your fellow conspiracy realist.
Sorry,
uh-huh.
Bro. I can't.
Yeah, no, it's perfect. It's perfect.
It's inseparable.
Before we dive into this, do you guys want to give a quick recap of our adventures of late? I believe this is the first time the three of us are recording in Atlanta again.
I was about to say stateside, but that's not exactly right. But yeah, ATL side. Yeah, we had a lovely little road trip together. We all went to Los Angeles to do a cool podcast evolution conference panel on how to talk about heavy stuff without being too much of a bummer.
The humor and the heavy.
You might be able to hear that very panel here one of these days in the not too distant future. But we also hung out with a friend of the show, Kevin, and some of his lovely friends from LA, and did music trivia at this place called Permanent Records, and hung out with some of our LA folks, Miles and Jack, and the whole gang. It was really great. We got a great LA crew out there.
Yeah, it was an amazing time, but we are back now, and we are headed to space.
Yeah, hats off to longtime conspiracy realist. You already know part of our motivation with secrets of space and the outer dark. If you've tuned into some of our recent collaborations, most notably a particular episode of The Passage, an excellent fiction series. Well, one episode is not fiction. The Hoover episode is 100% real. All of these are EP'd by our own Mr. Matt Frederick. Tonight, we're exploring a troubling allegation of conspiracy that is somewhat of a culmination of numerous previous rumors. This case differs in one notable respect. It appears at least some
of the allegations may hold water, or, you know, aliens. Off mic, we were, or off air, we were talking a little bit about some of the stuff that troubles us here. And, you know, guys, we never did an episode about one of our protagonists in this story. Our tale begins with one man, a Scottish national named Gary. And Gary, when our story begins, is troubled by some rumors he's heard online. Here are the facts.
That's right. In March of 2002, the year of our Lord, Scottish United Kingdom national Gary McKinnon was arrested at his apartment, or a flat, as they call it, in London, accused under suspicion of successfully hacking into secret and highly classified sensitive U.S. military computers from February 2001 to March of 2002. He was 22 years old at the time.
Kind of a sensitive time to be hacking into government computers.
Right. I mean, you had Y2K, and then, of course, now we're right in the thick of post 9/11 paranoia and anxiety.
Yeah, it's a strange milieu. It's a bad romance of state surveillance. Last time I'll say it, of state surveillance and lackluster cybersecurity, but also an intense need to make an example of people.
Oh, well, yeah, exactly. Because Gary McKinnon is not the only person who was interested in trying to find, you know, secret stuff online at that time. I mean, guys, you probably have memories. I remember as a kid learning some of the tricks, I would say, of getting into servers that maybe you're not supposed to.
The password is password.
We've all had our own personal back doors at one time or another into military intelligence systems. Well, am I right?
No, that's not what I mean. Using computers to access stuff that you wouldn't be able to access unless you had a computer and you knew how to use it, right?
1,000,000%. Mm.
And he's an early adopter, is Gary, because he gets his first computer around 14 years old. So he grows up with this as the TED Talkie folks would say, he is native to this environment. And, you know, when they first arrest him, he's held in, I think, Brixton for about 6 to 7 hours. So like drunk tank rules. And while he's held, they take his computers, his personal ones, and they also take he had a side business repairing people's computers. So they take any computer he touches, and then they release him back into the wild. But the case wends on. Uncle Sam is very mad about this because he kind of David V. Goliathed them, if we're being honest. And so it comes to pass that Scotland Yard in June or July of 2005, they scoop him up. And again, and this is when things get serious. The DOJ, U.S. Department of Justice, indicts him on eight separate counts of computer-related crimes. And at first they say, hey, man, you did over $566,000 U.S. dollars worth of damage to not just our hardware, but to our network, to the function of U.S. security. And then they come back and they say, it was actually over $700,000, then $800,000, then $900,000.
Man, it's like this guy was copying movies or something, I know, putting them on LimeWire.
You wouldn't download a UFO, would you?
I would if I could.
I would 100% download a UFO.
I don't think you can. Did you guys ever get one of those cease and desist letters from like HBO? Or okay, maybe don't want to.
No, I'm okay. Very clean.
Fair enough. Well, I certainly did back in the heyday, which was literally around this time. It was the golden age of peer-to-peer sharing. And
you were LimeWire?
Yeah, I was LimeWire. I did all of the various ones. I mean, I was an early Napster user back when it was like the bane of record labels. But that was a long time ago. Can't come at me now. Statute of limitations is surely up. But Ben, I was wondering, when they released him, I know this is sort of a thing that intelligence and you know, law enforcement officials will do. Was it a catch and release situation where they were like monitoring what he would do after? I'm just wondering, or is that not necessarily the case?
That's a great question, Noel. And I cannot speak with authority here, but based on Spidey sense, Let's say yes.
Okay.
Let's actually, based on Spidey sense, while we cannot officially confirm that, let's say 100% absolutely.
Okay.
Wouldn't you do the same thing?
Well, it seems like a smart thing to do if you don't have enough to keep them on, or at least you have enough to grab their stuff, then it probably is best for your case if you just keep an eye on them out in the wild.
And Matt's right about the shadow of 9/11 looming large there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dude, with all the laws that were being written towards the end of the time that he was performing these activities, right? I mean, they are at that time being written, right? Within the confines of the White House and all of the attorneys that work around that structure, I guess. But the other thing is, I'm imagining the interrogation room, right? This is like having an interrogation room across an ocean where somebody on one side is saying, hey, this is what we have on you. And the person on the other side sweating, I guess. What did they say they had on him?
Well, what they said they had on him in the UK was suspicion of illicit activities that may have compromised. This is where it gets muddy, because the concern was he may have compromised British nationals in the beginning, or he may have compromised British government networks, which would be kind of more important, honestly, more important to the UK than the compromise of a foreign nation. Five Eyes aside, but shout out to you guys. Thanks for tuning in. The idea then is immediately to find out what they can get him on, right?
Yeah.
If you look at his own origin story, he is, Gary himself, is pretty transparent. He says, you know, I was arrested in March 2002 for hacking into networks, domains like .gov, .mil. The way he breaks it down, and Gary, if you're listening, this is brilliant, and brilliant people are always humble. This is brilliant because he says, look, I do sysadmin, systems administration. I wasn't doing some crazy sci-fi hacking. I was basically cracking things with very lazy solutions. So when the British release him, I do think it is, to your point, Noel, a catch and release kind of thing. We've taken this guy's toys, right? We've taken his access. Let's see what else he can do when we put him in the wind, right? And the problem is that the Department of Justice doesn't like it, because they got touched. You know what I mean? They're a Goliath who yet again got Davided. So they want to make an example. And they're doing this, by the way, you know, history will prove they make examples of other countries, right? They make examples of terrorist organizations, even if those are not necessarily involved in the events of September 11th. So the Department of Justice says, we demand that the kingdom extradites Gary McKinnon. He must face trial in the United States. We have him dead to rights. Originally, they said he hacked something like 97 different military and NASA computers over the course of that year you described, Noel. The number would later go up to 200. And he had a bit of the theatrical about him. He was using a handle, a pseudonym, Solo. And he was, Gary McKinnon is, again, a very, very intelligent person. He was smart enough not to do this at his own apartment or flat. He was operating out of his girlfriend's aunt's house. But that didn't help. And Uncle Sam had a lot of beef. They said, you shut down a network of 2,000 computers, mission critical infrastructure for the U.S., the world's most dangerous military. You shut it down for like more than 24 hours. And you had to swing your dick around a little bit, because you would go on these websites at least once. I think multiple times Solo would post, quote, your security is crap.
That's funny.
Classic leet speak.
It's also the kind of stuff that if he were in the employ of said agency would be welcome. Right. They hire like hackers or people like Gary to look for holes in their security. But in this case, it's just a troll. He's kind of thumbing his nose, you know, at him, poking the eye of the bear, which does not necessarily bode well for his, you know, continued anonymity and freedom.
In Gary's defense, they had over 30 years to develop better, you know, security for their systems since ARPA created their net. Right.
I mean, foreshadowing DARPA. Yeah. You're absolutely right, Matt. And they also had more than three decades to change passwords from, you know, password, but they did not. And McKinnon leveraged that. McKinnon, by the way, has been diagnosed with Asperger's, and he was missing some of the key elements that authorities like when they want to prosecute these sorts of exploits. He was not a terrorist, had no strong extremist ideology. There was no ransomware involved, no financial gain. He was solely seeking knowledge about UFOs, or what we call UAP now in the West. And for that, and he feels like he found something, by the way, but for that, the DOJ wanted him in a United States jail in the U.S. penal system for 60 years. Again, he's 22 at this time, which means he would be 82 when he's released if he got 60. And they were pushing for 70, just by the way. So that would be 92. Yeah, in the U.S. penal system, shout out Jason Flom, this is functionally a death sentence.
Yeah, but then they were like, oh, guys, we caught ourselves a nerd, a really interesting nerd.
And, I almost just did a spit take, Matthew. Sorry.
What do you do at that point?
Well, he did say, he did come clean. He said, look, I left that, you know, I left a little graffiti on one computer. Your security is crap. And then in classic McKinnon, he also said, you know, because your security was crap, but I didn't destroy anything. I just got in to the museum after dark. I looked around. I found some stuff that was not on display for the public. And this tale, I think it's a fascinating parable for state power, secrecy, cybersecurity, and conspiracy. But for tonight's purpose, our main question hinges on motivation. We know what the U.S. government says McKinnon did, but why did he do it? Maybe we talk a little bit about his motivation here.
Sure. I mean, McKinnon was and remains quite convinced that certain world governments, the U.S. included, really in particular, actively suppress technology, a thing we talk about all the time, especially as it pertains to the potential explanation of UAP sightings. You know, we often come back around to the old chestnut of it's likely some kind of craft that is classified and was being tested and essentially was caught in the midst of a test. Certainly not the only explanation for things like that, but definitely a pretty good one. However, the types of technology and information that he believes are suppressed are gonna be a little bit maybe more of a head scratcher than what I just described. Some more skeptical, discerning listeners might scoff, perhaps. He believes governments have things like, you know, kind of more sci-fi future tech, things that we really don't have any evidence of there being the ability to create at this point in time, just based on the technology that we do know about, things like anti-gravity devices, much more, you know, out there UFO-related technologies, things like free energy. Another version of that zero-point energy. And in many of his public statements, he has declared this to be morally repugnant, given that some of these technologies might actually be helpful in, you know, things we talk about all the time, like why are they suppressing things that could actually be of use to civilization at large? Isn't that a little bit short-sighted? Perhaps a little selfish of Uncle Sam. Share with the class, including problems like poverty.
One.
Yeah. Inequality, you know, social and economic, and of course, a big one that I think will probably be a huge source of any potential future conflicts, things like resources, starvation, you know, the biggies.
Call that four.
But the reasoning behind it is that some of the other kids in the class want to murder the other kids in the class, right? Including the ones who develop the technology. So, like, I don't know. It really stinks, but I see the reasoning there from McKinnon, at least.
Yeah, the idea there being technologies that could improve life for the common good, for everybody living, but in doing so, they would actually be disruptors to civilization as it stands. So like clean potable water.
Or potentially weaponized, right?
Right. Again, like clean potable water, could all that same technology could be dual use. It could be weaponized, right? And this is stuff that is at the heart of Gary McKinnon's motivation. His search is not motivated in any way by making money. He doesn't want to publish a book. He doesn't want to, you know, hold a seminar. He's not trying to steal patents or whatever. He's not trying to fight for, again, some sort of extremist ideology. He is going back to things like the Disclosure Project. He's thinking in particular of former governmental employees, some academics, government employees like Donna Hare, who worked for NASA and alleged that NASA held hard evidence of UFO or UAP. In short, Gary McKinnon believed and believes the truth is out there, it's hidden, and the public deserves to know. And with that, maybe we pause for, I was going to say a moment of silence. It's not going to be a moment of silence, folks. We're going to pause for some ads, and then we're going to get to the heart of this. What did he claim he actually found? Snagajob is where America goes to hire with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring.
With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs on demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time.
You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer?
Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that.
With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way.
Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right?
Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. Visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert.
Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from the Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
And we've returned. It was a spreadsheet, basically.
Yeah.
And several photographs. Photographs that, in the interest of transparency, none of us have viewed unedited or in the... I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it in the form that he describes.
Well, yeah, he basically found what all of the hackers find nowadays when they get a hold of giant databases that, you know, an ISP keeps on somebody or a credit card company, right? A spreadsheet. We all know this, right? In an Excel spreadsheet, we've seen these things where there's a name, right? A date, perhaps, and then other information. We don't know exactly what other information on individuals was found within that spreadsheet, but it was about something weird, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like that comparison to credit card records. He found metadata. essentially. So he saw these names and information, and a couple of phrases stuck out to him. One was non-terrestrial officers, and then transfers between different fleets for these officers. He then cross-references these names with a database of all the publicly available U.S. Navy and military personnel, and surprise, surprise, he's not able to find the names of these non-terrestrial officers. So this is umami, right? This is really tasty conspiracy umami.
Yum, yum.
Yeah, yeah. Yum, yum, indeed. And he says, look, I have found something far beyond the sadly mundane skullduggery of corruption and coup and cover-up. He says, I have found information about the development of a secret outer space fleet. Furthermore, I found that there is an inexhaustible source of power, to your point, Noel, about zero point or free energy. It exists. That's what powers these ships. And then he says, I've seen the photographs that Hare was talking about. I have seen photographs of UFOs in the files at the Johnson Space Center building. I took a screenshot of one, and it's a cigar-shaped UAP in between outer space and Earth's atmosphere. And he also said he found evidence of a secret program called Solar Warden. This is the rabbit hole.
Oh, definitely. But didn't his 56K modem messed up while he was like capturing that screenshot? Isn't that what he was saying?
Mm-hmm,
and
maybe Bigfoot's just blurry, you know?
Well, but what I mean, look, according to Gary McKinnon, he was on a dial-up modem. He was downloading an image, basically taking a screenshot, and it messed up or didn't finish completely.
Right.
But again, this photograph is from a satellite's point of view. Imagine like way above the Earth, looking down at the Earth and sees this cigar-shaped thing. But he described it weirdly, right? There was also geodesic spheres on either end of the cigar shape.
Like,
which
did not connected or as part of the body.
I don't know. That's how he's described it to Wired and other places when first talking about it.
I don't know, guys. My mind immediately goes to there's a whole kind of school of art called glitch art where you can remove pixels or essentially simulate a low quality data transmission, and a lot of that ends up with the result of smeared pixels or things that kind of are stretched or weirdly shaped, you know, of an image. I do tend to wonder if that 56K modem glitch maybe caused a visual anomaly. I don't know. You mentioned already at the top, Ben, or we mentioned at the top, the idea of some of these claims being something that might be approached with a little skepticism. And I think that's where I'm starting. But this is also a new story to me, so I'm going to keep an open mind.
Yeah. And this is where the rabbit hole begins. We can go in depth on Gary McKinnon, may indeed, hopefully, speak with him in a later installment of Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. But for now, for our purposes tonight, fellow conspiracy realist, what is Operation Solar Warden? Here's where it gets crazy. To the true believers, it is a secret space program leveraging suppressed technology of unknown provenance that has been operating in secret since 1980. And Gary McKinnon comes with facts in multiple interviews. Matt, you cited one of the ones, you cited the Wired interview that he did a while back.
2006.
In that one, he says the U.S. Naval Network and Space Operations Command, or NSOC, is the ultimate head of Solar Warden. And he comes with some specifics that he derives in this hack. He says there are about 300 specifically U.S. Army personnel, which I take to mean, given that he's a Scottish national, I take that to mean U.S. military in general.
Yeah, probably doesn't know all
right,
of the ins and
differences
outs
in the branches. And then he says there are 8 enormous, like cartoonish cigar-sized craft or cigar-shaped craft. And each of these are about the length of two football fields. And each of these are capable of all that, Paul, beat me here, all that amazing shit we hear about in UFO lore, turning on a dime, disappearing, trans-medium actions, like from the sea to the orbit, you know, et cetera.
Oh, yeah. This is another really weird thing that he notes. He says on these objects, quote, there were no visible seams or riveting, which is interesting, right? If it's a man-made craft, you imagine you've got to bolt together pieces of metal. At least those are the ones we know about, right? Even on the most advanced aircraft or jets, there are seams between pieces. Like if you imagine some of these more advanced aircraft that their wings change, right? We've probably seen these in movies or we've seen images of them. You can see the seams. But this thing is just...
You mean like they fold up?
Yes.
Change position? I see.
So, yeah. A lot of the aircraft actually change position in how their wings look. But He's not seeing any of that stuff on these craft, which to me is... I don't know. That it doesn't mean anything besides, I guess, when we think about UAP sightings now, it's leading me down towards, you know, the 2020s. Of sightings rather than the early 2000s.
Right, exactly. And that's a really great point, because even now, all acknowledged terrestrial made craft do have seams. Like even the highfalutin stealth craft that were initially confused with alien technology, and a confusion that the US government was glad to embrace, by the way, even that stuff, if you look at it, it does have seams, right? They build and sculpt the metal and weld it together. But he's saying this is way more T-1000.
Yes, that's exactly the image, Ben. Some kind of alloy or metal that is moldable in that way, that doesn't require it to be assembled in separate pieces.
Like actively moldable, like able to change state, you know.
Right. Like in the, this is a shout out to conspiracy realists of a certain age, but like the spacecraft in Flight of the Navigator.
Absolutely. Or the creature in The Abyss, which is, I believe, the first James Cameron movie to really use that T-1000 liquid metal thing. Oh, that was more made of water, but.
Right. Yeah, I rewatched The Abyss. That held up. Yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
I'd like to see it as well.
Have you guys seen Flight of the Navigator?
I know it was a big Disney kind of kid in space movie. Like, isn't that right? Like an adventure in the stars.
Yes. And in there, they have a craft that is capable of the same sort of thing that McKinnon is describing. However, to be very clear, McKinnon does not claim that he has seen this in person. He's saying he did a hack. He found evidence of this. And he also says, look, it's not just these eight enormous double football field spacecraft. There is a much larger number of smaller, what he calls scout craft, and they can do reach even further heights of maneuverability and violation of physics as humans understand it. He says he found records of 43 of these smaller scout ships. And if you think of the way that the US and conventional naval forces at least deploy carrier groups, then it makes sense that you need ancillary craft for the big boys, right? For the carriers and so on. He also says he finds two names. It's implied that the two names he finds are the names for two of the big boys, the USS, wait for it, S. LeMay, and the USS, wait for it, S. Hillenkoetter. You know, people know that US Navy ships usually only have two S's. Gary saw three S's. Maybe that stands for United States Spaceship. Unproven.
I mean, it could. It legitimately could. In 2020, we got the Space Force. And there's all kinds of weird stuff happening with them right now in the news. I'm sure we'll talk about it a little bit. But USSS LeMay.
Mm-hmm. Nobody will figure it out, right? So in general, we have to be honest, folks. Often you can see claims like this in any number of forums and conventions. You can talk to people who say, hey, I'm convinced I have found something like this. Already, we see that McKinnon's case differs in one serious respect. The United States government was willing to cross the pond to get this guy and put him in prison for the rest of his life. And when the U.S., they don't choose to do that lightly. Like, spoiler, if you want to pirate, a copy of the cinematic masterpiece Vibes, the DOJ is not going to come for you. I hope that comment ages well as we continue into the future. But there's a second respect in which this is different. In 2010, independent journalist, investigator, UFO researcher named Darren Perks did something that we're quite fortunate to be able to do in the United States. He filed a Freedom of Information Act request, commonly called a FOIA. In these parts of the global woods, the argument of the FOIA is, if you are paying taxes, you should have a right to request from the U.S. government what they're doing with all that money that everybody has to pay. And Perks found some weird sand that appear to, if not one-to-one, corroborate the claims of Gary McKinnon. It appeared to further differentiate them from the usual disinformation and scuttlebutt of UFO lore.
And just a quick aside before we get into it, the response time and, let's just say, customer service of the Freedom of Information Act request wasn't great. Left something to be desired.
Yeah. He reached out to the Department of Defense, DOD, right? I'm going to read part of this, guys. I think this is fantastic.
And this is from a Huffington Post article or blog written by Perks in 2012.
Yeah, so we have to believe Perks that this is actually what he received, because there was no screenshot of this email, right? But this is an email from the DOD. Quote, about an hour ago, I spoke to a NASA rep who confirmed this was their program and that it was terminated by the president. He also informed me that it was not a joint program with the DOD. The NASA rep informed me that you should be directed to the Johnson Space Center FOIA manager. I have ran your request through one of our space-related directories, and I'm waiting on one other division with the command to respond back to me. I will contact you once I have a response from the other division. And then it ends with, did NASA refer you to us?
So, yeah.
Weird, right? Like,
so... Yeah, the comparison is something that will be unfortunately identifiable and understandable to all of us listening along tonight. Have you ever called a big company with a lot of departments and they say, who are you trying to reach? Let me get you over to that. You get over to them and they're like, oh, who are you trying to reach? Blah, blah, blah. So this is this purposeful obtuseness, or is this just a hazard of bureaucracy? I would argue the latter, to be quite honest with you.
But in the end, DOD, at least if this email is real, said, yeah, that's a real thing, and it's NASA's, so, like, leave us alone.
Right. Well, that's, I mean, is that what you would say? Like, yeah, sure, I don't know. Call them. So the Perks concludes from this. Again, this is in 2012, says Solar Warden in Perks' research is allegedly made up of black project contractors, skunkworks, basically, in the U.S. And skunkworks are very real and continue today, and says that there are some parts and components and software that are contributed by Canada, the U.K., Italy, Austria, Russia, that part didn't age well, and Australia. And then also Perks says, quote, it is said that the program, Solar Warden, is tested and operated from secret military bases such as Area 51 in Nevada. Be careful always with the passive voice, folks. It is said avoids naming the speaker.
Yeah. Well, and the writer who wrote that, Darren Perks, is citing Gary McKinnon in all of that stuff, like saying this is information that comes from Gary McKinnon and what he found when he did his hack.
Right. So it verges on tautological, right? Tautology. But the narrative divides, you know, in the pursuit of information. Again, Perks finds himself referred to various government bodies. And if any of this is, if any of this holds up, then these allegations are stunning. They're world shaking. As the internet used to say back in the early 2000s, big if true. This means that the U.S. would, one, have knowledge of suppressed technology, whatever the origin or provenance, and then two, somehow successfully restricted this knowledge from the public, didn't let its enemies know, even though some of its erstwhile enemies were collaborating with it, and it also hid it in some part from its allies, and three, at the same time, while keeping all this a secret, it deployed this technology successfully, even if only in a test run, like that BMW, that T-1000 BMW that we were talking about off air.
Oh, it's made of liquid metal too?
It's made of fabric. With, okay.
Fabric sorry,
you
metal.
Said the T-1000. Metal. Is that the actual model number, or were you referring back to the T-1000? Okay, cool.
BMW is not that cool. Sorry, BMW owners.
Yeah, but it uses a thing that DARPA has an active research project on. I guess we would call it, what do they call it? Active flow control.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to change basically the shape of a craft at will or in certain configurations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the idea being that it can adapt in media res as needed, right? And you don't have to... if you want a different sort of airflow control on your typical Fast and Furious vehicle, you have to take it into the shop to put in a spoiler. You can just do that on the road with this.
Oh yeah. And often with BMW, I think with their model, it was to make it cool looking and in different ways. But yes. With DARPA, it's their program is called CRANE, which, you know, these acronyms that they're running with at DARPA, Control of Revolutionary Aircraft with Novel Effectors. And then you combine that up with their DRAG program that's also active, Drag Reducing Architected Geometries, which is interesting, right?
Yeah, but putting revolutionary in there definitely sounds like a sales pitch.
I know. No, dude. They had to make Crane work, okay, Ben?
Mm. Yeah, all right. They had to make Crane work. We've all been there. Also, you know, shout out to all the boffins at BMW who I'm sure working around the clock to institute turn signals in their vehicles. You know what I mean?
We're with you. Make it mandatory.
The struggle is real. You know, check in. With DARPA, science continues on BMW turn signals.
But for real, guys, do you think if DARPA publicly puts on their website a program like that, do you think that that is already something that has been developed and is controlled, and now it's just studying it more or something that they've already patented, or, you know, used their abilities to take that patent away and then research it for 10, 20, 30 years?
The Invention Act makes it pretty certain to me that for it to be on a publicly available website, the concept or the possibility has been proven. It's just whether or not it can be applicable in a feasible manner.
That's
my take. I don't know what you guys think.
I hear you. It's weird. It's just because you can also find their lunar architecture program that's been going on for a while. Just makes you think.
And China's going to mine the moon. And everything's fine on Earth. Anyway,
who's going to blow up the moon? Once China's up there mining, yeah, maybe us. I don't know.
Sarah Silverman's so mad. You know, we're Earthlings. Let's blow up Earth things. I rewatched that after one of our recent episodes. But there are some troubling truths to McKinnon's claims. First off, McKinnon has always said what he saw, whether or not you agree with it or his interpretation thereof. He says what he saw proves above all one thing. The U.S. will, by hook or by crook, seek dominance in outer space. And the pickle of it is, that's true. You don't need alien technology to prove that. The X-37B, if you're hearing this on Earth, that bad boy is flying over you right now. The NRO is all up in your text messages, if they want to be. Space Force is real.
The NRO is looking at your phone as you're walking outside at text mm-hmm. messages. They're not like that signals intelligence. They're literally looking at your
phone.
Like
they're zooming in. Like all those propaganda films you see where or the programs where like there are people working in an office that is way too nice for any law enforcement agency when they're like leaning over the computer with the one person who apparently knows how to use Google.
And seven like, screens.
Right. And they're like, enhance that image. Can we enhance that image? The NRO can really do that.
Yeah. They actually have the lenses for it, which is so weird to think about. But guys, there's also things like the new Space Force and Operation Cobra, which is this giant, Cobra Gold 24.
Okay. Put some respect on it, yeah.
Seriously, just a huge joint multinational exercise, kind of like Jade Helm, where they are using space and the forces in space that they control, the space forces.
Get it,
and they're doing joint military exercises with that. And y'all, this was announced March 28th, 2024. So just a couple of days ago, as we're recording this, Space Force created a thing called Space Sent, which is their central command, basically, at Space Force.
Sure, like CENTCOM or ForceCOM. Yeah.
Exactly. They call it Space Sent. And they just deployed this thing called U.S. Space Force Central Combat Detachment 3-1, which is for space combat, guys. It's the first time I've actually heard of, you know, the United States or Space Force. I think they're getting ready to put weapons in space, like, and do it actively and publicly, because that was a public announcement that they made.
And it will be in reaction to signals sent by the Russian forces. So it's all defense, I'm sure.
But I guess what I mean, dude, yes, but it's happening right now and it's real. And just I'm imagining how far we've come since 2002 when Gary was in those servers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. History proved him to a degree prescient, right? In some respects. Again, extraterrestrials have not been proven nor confirmed yet. And Solar Warden as a concept is, again, officially unproven. There has been to date no official confirmation, no statement to the public past that one sort of alighting FOIA response of anything like Solar Warden. But there are troubling things in the wind. There are ripples in the water. The sea is not calm, and what swims beneath or above it? We're going to pause for a word from our sponsor, and then we'll return with our verdict and maybe an update on Gary. Has anybody talked with Gary?
I wish.
Gary's okay.
Yeah, I hope Gary's okay. Snagajob is where America goes to hire with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring.
With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs on demand, temp to hire, part-time, or full-time.
You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer?
Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that.
With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way.
Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right?
Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. Visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert.
Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist.
We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
And we have returned to your earlier point, Matt. Recent events require a new reassessment, pardon the alliteration, of Gary's claims. In the years, or excuse me, decades following 2002, multiple, largely credible individuals came forward with claims that something was fishy up there in the skies and in the ink. I mean, that's the question. Did Gary McKinnon succeed in his mission? Did he verify and publicize some sort of long-running, obscured, above top-secret program leveraging bleeding-edge technology?
Well, what he didn't understand is that that Excel spreadsheet actually had a list of non-human assets within the United States Army, or just military, whatever. Mm. No, I'm just joking. I'm just joking.
It was like a hidden column.
Well, no, but imagine if there was, it's really funny. Can you imagine if it was like they just had human names for everybody else's benefit working on the teams?
Mm-hmm. But instead of like Zarg or like, or, you know, whatever.
Something there that you couldn't even pronounce probably with your human mouth.
Dr. Hugh Mann.
Yes. Dr. Acula. That's different. I don't know, guys. My skeptic brain is still kind of firing off at this point. I don't know that I've been swayed because we've certainly seen evidence of some stuff, and it usually does tie back to these kind of tests of bleeding edge tech, like you said, Ben, but not stuff quite within the realm of what old Gary here is alleging. So I don't know. I would love to speak to the man himself, but where is this this investigation gotten you guys to?
Yeah, it's a good question. Skeptics may easily and with validity dismiss the entirety of this tangled story as hogwash, but if we are exercising skepticism and critical thinking,
which goes both ways, skeptic doesn't just mean that you're negging something. It just means that you thought about it, and you could be skeptical on the opposite end.
Yeah, I'm really glad. I'm really happy that you point that out, because skepticism that shies away from inconvenient questions is only another zealous ideology, and absolutely, as such does not serve our purposes and is indeed antithetical to critical thinking. I mean, here are the questions. If any or all of this stuff that McKinnon is claiming is false, why did the United States spend so much time pushing for his extradition? Right. They put a lot of blood, sweat and treasure into that. You could say they wanted to make of him an example. Makes sense.
We certainly know they love to do that. And if they've got a big one, they'll probably put a little more resources into it, because it would certainly serve their goals of discouraging others from, you know, getting into their business.
But if he really found something, wouldn't the men in black just give him the old flasheroo?
Disappeared him.
Send him to a black site somewhere? I mean,
right. Yeah, commit suicide by shooting himself twice in the back of his head. Or maybe shooting himself with his non-dominant hand and then his shih tzu and his two children. Look it up.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it really makes me think of a show that I've really been enjoying lately that I think we talked about during our travels, an Apple TV or Apple Plus show called Slow Horses, about spy masters, you know, in the UK, working for their intelligence services. And of course, Gary Oldman plays the spy master who's in charge of kind of the worst spies that sort of did a bad job and got sort of put in this place called Slough House for punishment. But some of the stuff that it goes into in terms of how far the government will go to silence those that have information that they would rather not get out there, it's pretty chilling stuff, and it really does feel like it has the ring of truth. So I'm with you guys. I feel like the faked suicide or just, you know, convenient vanishing would probably be on the table if he really did have the goods.
And then to answer that, to counterpoint to that first question, why did the U.S. spend so much time pushing for his extradition? If any of this stuff is true, not all of it, but any of it, then why did the U.S., the world's most powerful and dangerous force, why did they ultimately comply with the United Kingdom's decision to keep McKinnon on their soil? We'll get to that. Why do they push, and then give? Why on earth, to put this quite bluntly, in a way that you will not hear in diplomatic conversations, why on earth, pardon the wordplay, is Gary McKinnon still alive? It's true. At this point, he's alive. He's on UK soil. He did delete his Twitter. I guess that's a casualty of it. If you want to,
because it's an X account now.
It's an X account now. Sure. I mean, he's big on Truth Social or whatever. But the photos he allegedly obtained were removed from his computer when he was initially popped and put in Brixton, right, in 2002, he doesn't have access to these photos as well. Per his most recent conversations, he claims that the UK government used Photoshop in specific, shout out Adobe, to edit out the UFOs from these photos before they were released or even propagated internally. And that is a tale all too common in the modern narrative, cough, cough, folklore of disclosure. The proof is there. I saw it, but due to insert reason here, you cannot see it.
Well, yeah, I'm thinking about the Mirage Men and some of those discoveries that the U.S. government will use disinformation agents to put false information out there to a UFO enthusiast, right? So, and I'm imagining what if the security on those servers actually was really great and they watched Gary McKinnon stroll through the door and they went, oh, guys, this guy's sneaking around. Let's get some of those UFO photographs, those like ones that we generated. Let's get those into a folder. Is anyone really good at Excel? Let's make a spreadsheet with quote non-terrestrial officers. Let's make sure he sees that. Like, do you think that's even in the realm of possibility?
Yeah, it's in the realm of possibility. You know, what's that line? The pawn mocks the movements of the bishop, but never sees the chessboard from above. You know what I mean? Or whoa, it's just a cool prank.
Well, but in the end, like it's part of the propaganda world building that the United States has been involved with for since its inception, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Make the story about us big and huge and scary to a lot of points, but also exciting and, you know, patriotic and special. And every country does that. And sure, I just wonder if there's something like that.
There's theater to it. It's quite possible. It's also, you know, in the point or to the pro side of that argument, it is much more likely than the idea that extraterrestrials crashed on the planet Earth in a time of modern civilization and that their technology was understandable and recoverable and successfully leveraged by primates. You know what I mean? Like, putting it in that perspective, the grift seems a little bit more plausible.
Yeah, but it took 33 years, right? 1947 to 1980.
Photoshop wasn't where it is now. That's part of it. But I see. I think that's a good example. And, you know, folks, we don't have the answers for this. We can tell you that in 2012, under the administration of Theresa May, Gary McKinnon's extradition was blocked. And it was blocked entirely on the basis of human rights, given that the U.S. penal system is a nightmare, and given that McKinnon does have Asperger's, is not affiliated with any terrorist organization, et cetera, et cetera. They said, we're not going to do it. We're not going to send this guy to the wolves. And ultimately, as we record this evening, McKinnon was neither trialed nor officially, the charges against him were dropped in the United Kingdom. And there have been few substantive updates since. Imagine, if you will, Julian Assange over in that Ecuadorian embassy, looking on in wonder and envy.
Yeah, no joke. Julian, we're still rooting for you. We just hope you're okay.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, and in the way of an update, what is happening with Julian? Is he still just holding patterns as it has always been?
Is it that time? Is it a Julian Assange update time?
We haven't talked about it in so long. I kind of lost track. I just assumed it was sort of the same, much of the same. But
he is still embroiled. I was talking briefly with our pals from Zeitgeist, Miles and Jack, about this. He is still embroiled in attempting to stave off extradition to the United States. But Uncle Sam wants him very bad.
Like that poster? I want you.
Like that poster.
You specifically. But man, he's been fighting that for years.
Oh, yeah.
I guess my question is, like, if they really want you, maybe it should give us a little bit of solace. It does appear they can't just get you. There's a lot of red tape that has to be worked through to make things like that happen. A lot of real cooperation.
It depends what you did, too, right?
That's also true.
It does. It does. You mess with the future. You mess with the money. You mess with the resource extraction. You get on a different list. It's a much shorter list, and the consequences of that list are not cool. He got upgraded on the naughty list, basically. He got naughty plus.
Oh, yeah. And with McKinnon, they were just like, oh, man, he found the pictures of the thing we're going to deploy in 2024 during the solar eclipse. Ah, geez.
Nice.
Oh, well, it'll be all right.
Nice. This episode may come out around then. Yeah. And right now, as of about 3 days ago, last week, as we record at the end of March, a British court temporarily yet again delayed the extradition of Julian Assange. So it's still kicking the can down the road. And we are going to have, I think, a full update when that news breaks. I have one last question for you guys. I know we're getting close to our time together this evening. Matt Knoll, fellow conspiracy realist, if there is a real secret afoot, then riddle me this. Why is the BBC coming out with a feature film called The People versus Gary McKinnon? Why did the BBC Radio 4 air a 2007 radio play called The McKinnon Extradition? If you're trying to cover up the truth, I mean, it's the Ouija board question. If a Ouija board actually lets you speak with the dead, why can you buy one at every department store?
I mean, I hear you. Why did they let Ian Douglas write a 3-part series called Solar Warden? I mean, it's out there. You can find it. And guess what it's about?
What's it about?
Very thing. It's a sci-fi science fiction 3-part series. The first one's called Alien Secrets, and it came out in June 2020. And the third series came out last April.
Any good?
We don't know. We haven't read it. I haven't read it.
Well, what about the radio play thing? That's interesting medium for it. Have either of you guys checked it out?
I thought the radio play I thought was interesting. It's way more, in my opinion, it's way more focused on the extradition struggle for Gary McKinnon. And the BBC film that should be on the way soon is based on a book by Janice Sharp, who is Gary McKinnon's mother. So Solar Warden, the science fiction series, is more focused on what we're talking about today.
And it is, by the way, it is about the Solar Warden fiction series, just to make sure we know what we're talking about here. It does focus on the end of World War II, right around the old Roswell crash times. Just saying. okay. I don't know, whatever. The art looks fun to me. And Ian Douglas has definitely written a dang crap load of science fiction and military books.
Yeah, he's quite prolific author for sure. And there has, in recent years, been a growing market for stories touching on government cover-ups and allegations of unusual things, especially, you know, alternate history or revisionist history, UFOs, UAP. But one thing is for sure, fiction, fantasy aside, there is a lot of activity in the air these days, more so now than at any point in, wait for it, modern civilization. A lot of stuff is out in space, and until the public gets some solid answers, a lot of that stuff remains the stuff they don't want you to know. We can't wait to hear your thoughts, folks. We try to be easy to find online.
Find us online at the handle Conspiracy Stuff, where we exist on Facebook, on YouTube, and on X, FKA Twitter. On TikTok and Instagram, we are Conspiracy Stuff Show.
Do you like calling people and leaving voicemails? Where you can do that to us, call 1-833-STDWYTK. That's stuff they don't want you to know, just smashed together DARPA style. When you call in, give yourself a cool nickname, let us know if we can use your name and message on the air, and then you've got 3 minutes. Do whatever you'd like within those 3 minutes if you do, you know, the first things we ask you to do. If you've got more to say than could fit in that message, if you've got links, if you've got attachments, why not instead shoot us a good old-fashioned email? We are.
The folks who read every single email we get, take us to the edge of the rabbit hole. We'll do the rest. Be warned, folks. Sometimes the void writes back. Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Attention, true crime enthusiast. Searching for a way to unwind after diving deep into the mysteries that keep you up at night? Look no further.
Introducing Lazarus Naturals, your trusted companion for CBD relief. With a commitment to transparency, Lazarus Naturals oversees every step from farm to doorstep, ensuring purity and quality you can trust.
Visit LazarusNaturals.com today and discover how CBD can help you decompress and recharge for your next investigation.
That's LazarusNaturals.com.
Lazarus Naturals, your partner in unraveling the mysteries of true crime.
Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
From BBC Radio 4. Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax. Terminix can help.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast.
If your home or business has pests, don't stress it.
Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com.